Okay, so we were talking last time about the Gensen system for intuitionistic propositional logic. I won't repeat the entire system now because hopefully everybody's got it. And most of the rules look as expected anyway, with two exceptions, and I'm going to write those down because we're going to need their exact format all the time. And on top of that, I copied one of them wrong from my notes last time. So, well, we did have it right in the end, but so let's just recall these two. One of them was the right rule for implication, which looked like this. Recall that we changed the notation for the sequent, right? Have the double arrow in between instead of the turnstile. Okay, so we have an implication to the right-hand side of the double arrow now, and we wish to prove that. So what we do is we move the antecedent to the left of the double arrow, keep the psi on the right, and drop the context. Drop the context on the right, only keeping it on the left. And this rule was the key one that disabled proofs of certain classical facts that now are no longer provable in intuitionistic logic. And then there was the left rule. So in this case, we have the implication to the left of the double arrow, and this rule has two premises. One where we keep the psi on the left of the arrow and retain the implication, thereby making the rule actually stronger. And a second premise that looks as in the classical case, we move the antecedent to the right of the turnstile. So this is actually the only rule that shunts things across the double arrow. Right? All the other rules keep everything to the same side of the double arrow. This is the only one that will ever move a formula from, in this case, from the left to the right. Yes?
So changing it again.
Is it wrong again?
I don't know.
Wait a moment. No, So the part of the rule that retains the implication is the other one, damn it. As in my notes, correctly. So the one that retains the implication to the left of the arrow is the one that moves the antecedent to the right correctly, and the one that keeps the psi on the left-hand side is the one that actually drops the implication. And we will see why the rules are designed that way. So, because we are going to see a completeness proof today and a soundness proof. So, the soundness proof we will see why this rule has been designed as it stands. So, in particular, we will see why it drops the context. And in the completeness proof, we will see why the handling of the implication is as it is here. So kept on the left premise, dropped on the right hand premise. So the first thing we want to do is soundness. So in the sense that we want to show that all the rules preserve validity within one model, and we've already done one trivial case, I believe the disjunction rule on the left, right? Yeah. And so the more interesting rules remain. So let's start with which one? With the right implication rule. So this is continued. Okay, right implication rule is this one. So we assume a model that satisfies the premise. So we assume M models the premise gamma comma phi implies psi in a sense that we've defined last time. So basically what we do is we really insert conjunctions here, well, no disjunction here in this case because it's only one formula, and replace the double arrow by a single arrow. Okay, what do we have to show? Well, we have to show that the model also satisfies the conclusion, and for that, of course, we show that an arbitrary state of that model satisfies the conclusion. So we have to show that given some W, a state in the model, M and W satisfy the conclusion that is phi implies gamma, gamma double implies phi implies psi comma delta. Okay. Now we have to keep in mind that our reading of the double arrow is the same as that of the arrow. That is, we have to check satisfaction of an intuitionistic implication. So that is, we have to give ourselves an arbitrary successor state of W, assume that it satisfies what's on the left, and show that it satisfies what's on the right. So, we assume that we have a successor V of W, and we assume that V satisfies gamma. Well, I'll omit the conjunction in the hope that this will be clear. Okay. What do we have to show in this case? Well, we have to show that V satisfies the right-hand side of the double arrow, that is, the disjunction of this whole bit here, the implication, that's the principal formula, or the big disjunction of the delta. Right. And to that end, it will suffice to show that V satisfies the implication. And I mean, if anything is right, then this should follow from this premise here, because this premise here will clearly, I mean, just by basically a jointness of conjunction with implication, right? If V satisfies gamma, then V should satisfy this thing here. And indeed, that is easy to check. So now, of course, we again have to check an satisfaction of an intuitionistic implication. So again, we have to give ourselves a successor. Say U. And we assume that the successor satisfies phi. And we have to show that U satisfies psi. Now, of course, we exploit transitivity of the model. So because U is a successor of V and V is a successor of W, U is also a successor of V, of W. So the next thing we remember is that according to what Tadeusz showed us, satisfaction of any formula is stable under progressing in the frame. So something that is true remains true forever. Well, one thing that used to be true actually So I don't actually need that U is a successor of W yet. So because the thing that I need is already in V. So we have V, that V satisfies gamma, and U is a successor, and satisfaction of gamma is stable. So U also satisfies gamma. Well, U also satisfies phi. That is, U satisfies the conjunction of the whole thing, gamma and phi. Okay, but by assumption, the whole model satisfies this implication here between gamma and phi to psi. So I'll refer to this by saying by the premise. So the premise is this, which is supposed to be satisfied in M. U satisfies psi. Bang. Okay, I promised you that you would now see why we have dropped the delta, the context, on the right-hand side in the premise. So what would happen? So assume that we had kept delta in the premise. Well, what happens? What happens is we now don't really get that U satisfies psi. We only get that U satisfies psi or some big disjunction. Right. And now, we would need to show, well, I mean, here it still looks as if we are happy, right? Because, well, okay, we don't no longer get that U satisfies psi, but we know it satisfies one of these two things. If it satisfies psi, then we're happy. If it doesn't satisfy psi, then it must satisfy the other part here. I mean, that much is true, because the satisfaction clause for disjunction is really just the same as classically, more or less, as for, say, a modal logic, as an S4. So we would get that U satisfies this big disjunction here. So, right, so if U doesn't satisfy psi, then U satisfies this big disjunction. But we need this already earlier. We would need it for V. And it doesn't inherit backwards. V is before U. Right, this would be what we need. So either we would need that either V satisfies this implication here. Well, okay, that's dead because U doesn't happens not to satisfy psi. So we would need that V satisfies this big disjunction here, but that we don't get from the fact that U satisfies it. So that is why we need this stricter version of the rule, basically, where we don't admit the delta in the premise. So in the classical case, basically, the rule remains sound if we put delta there. That is because in the classical case, we never move between worlds. There's only one world. And as soon as, at some point, we get this, we get it everywhere, right? Okay, so that's the right implication rule. I mean, from this argument, one can immediately write down a countermodel that would invalidate the rule. Okay, so the next thing is the left implication rule. So now we need to assume that we have a model satisfying both the premises of the left implication rule. That is, M satisfies the left-hand premise, gamma, and phi implies psi, double implies phi, comma, delta. And M also satisfies the right-hand premise, which is gamma, comma, psi implies delta. So again, we have to show that the conclusion is valid in M. That is, we have to show that some state W, arbitrary state W in M, satisfies the sequence, the original target sequence, gamma, comma, phi implies psi, and double implies delta. Right. So again, we have to prove basically an intuitionistic implication, so we give ourselves a successor. So we have a successor V of W, and that successor V satisfies the left-hand side of the double arrow, that is the conjunction of gamma and the implication phi implies psi. Okay, what do we have to show? Well, we have to show V implies the disjunction, not implies, V satisfies the disjunction of delta. Right. And now we proceed by cases, which is weird, right? I will proceed by cases on whether phi is satisfied or not. So again, this sounds counterintuitive because this is an intuitionistic logic, but it's a rather classical semantics of an intuitionistic logic, a good old Kripke frame with a semantics defined in a classical meta-logic. So it will be the case that V either satisfies phi, for in this, as I will distinguish over, or it will not satisfy phi. So in case one, V satisfies phi. Well, now there's two things that we observe. First of all, W satisfies this implication here, right? Part of what we assumed about W. And second, V is a successor of W, and V satisfies phi. Well, it follows by the semantics of implication that V satisfies psi. Okay. And this here is valid. And moreover, V satisfies the conjunction of gamma. So, because V already satisfies the conjunction of gamma, and by the premise, well, by which I mean by the right premise, it follows that V satisfies the disjunction of delta. Not good?
Why does probably satisfy pi and pi sub psi.
That's what we assumed here. Oh no, it satisfies this.
Yeah, but it's V.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right, I misread. Why did I think? Well, what do my notes say about this?
We assume that we satisfies phi and flat psi.
V satisfies that,
yeah,
right? So
from above, part to the right.
Well, okay. So that makes it even easier. never mind. And of course, V is its own successor. Is there any implication holds in particular locally? So yes, right. Okay. I hope now we get it right. So V really does satisfy the implication as stated here, and it satisfies the antecedent, therefore it satisfies the consequent, and again V satisfies the conjunction of gamma, and we have this global assumption here in the premise, so V satisfies the conjunction of delta. So this was the case where we used the right premise, and we didn't need to use that, we still have the implication in there, right? So no use made of that. Case two. Well, actually, we won't observe use of that in the other case either, because, of course, the rule remains sound without that. So forget what I said. So the other case really is that V doesn't satisfy phi, stupid as it sounds. So, what do we have? V satisfies the left-hand side of our target sequent. So, it satisfies this here, conjunction of gamma and our implication by what we assumed about it. By the first premise, yeah, thank you, yes. So it's explicitly right. Left premise here, thank you. So that means it satisfies the assumption of the left premise, therefore it must satisfy the conclusion of the left premise, so that what's after the double arrow. And it doesn't satisfy phi, so it does satisfy the disjunction of delta, the other part of the right-hand side of that double arrow. Thank you. Yes. So, yeah, that's the soundness proof. Any questions? And that was the complete soundness proof. Of course, I omitted any number of cases, but I mean, these cases are all much easier than this one. All right. Now for completeness. Okay, so we've already roughly seen how this works, right? We showed that proof search terminates. Given that, we know that a failed proof will give us some sort of finite data structure, and we will then extract a counter model from that data structure. So, we extract a counter model from a failed proof search. We don't, strictly speaking, have to depend on the fact that the proof search is finite. I mean, if it's not finite, if we just keep searching forever, then we can just extract an infinite counter model that also works. But in this case, it happens to be finite. We'll analyze this first. So we'll talk about termination of proof search, of course. So the argument for termination will be rather like the one for S4, which maybe isn't surprising as we code intuitionistic logic into S4. But easier, because we know more things about the way formulas propagate. In particular, we know that every formula is basically stable along the transition relation, which also shows up in the way formulas propagate through the proof search. So the first thing that we observe is the following. The only actual obstacle to termination is this rule here. For the same reason as for S4, we retain the implication in one of the premises. So this thing here this thing here just isn't smaller than that one. In fact, most of the time it will be larger, right? Because we add a formula on the right-hand side and keep everything on the left. And of course, in reality, I mean, if we really apply this unrestrictedly, we get cycles, right? So we get, what can happen? For instance, we can do this, and then we can have the idea of somehow processing the phi. Maybe it disappears entirely in the process, and then we can just decide to extract it again. Or we can apply the rule, pursue this branch here, and all of a sudden apply the rule again and pursue the right-hand branch. And all this is clearly pointless. So I'll just write down that it is pointless, and then we'll think slightly more about why it's pointless. So I'm saying that it's clearly pointless to apply this left implication rule twice to the same formula. Well, twice, to be clear. But by twice, I mean twice in one branch. Why is that? Okay, so what happens in the course of the proof, in the course of hopefully any proof, is that the premises become progressively weaker than the target sequence. So now, if I start with this guy and then make this one here weaker, and I apply the rule again, then I've lost all that. So basically, then I'm back to square one. Right? So I basically backtrack to a sequence that's stronger than the one I already have. That's pointless. Right? So So the left premise in one branch. Before I apply the right-hand rule, because the right-hand rule will then change things dramatically because things get dropped on the right-hand side. In particular, this phi might get dropped. Of course, if the phi is dropped, then it makes perfect sense to reintroduce it later. But until that happens, it makes no sense to apply this rule twice. So why? Because the second time I apply it, before applying the right-hand rule, left premise and second application. Will be stronger than the current goal because it just reintroduces something, reintroduces something on the right-hand side that I've already weakened. And what else? Saying that, do I need to say this? All right. I could. So this was in case second application in second. So this was the case where left premise in second application. So this was the case where the second application is in the left branch. Of course, I have two cases. So I've applied the rule once, and I have two branches, and I could have the idea of applying the rule again in this branch. Then, like I said, what happens just produces something stronger than I already had. I don't want to make my proof goal stronger. So the other idea would be to pursue this branch, where I applied it on the left. On the right, well, then I won't even be able to apply it again. So that's, I wonder why I write anything here. And then I've dropped it. So yeah, so I don't even have to say anything about the other branch because in that branch I don't keep the formula, so I don't even get the chance to apply the rule to the same formula again. So bang. So I can put this in bracket and that's the whole argument. So there's no point in applying the left implication rule twice to the same implication in one branch. So, and I'm now pretending that I'm implementing the proof search. What will happen in this case? I will just mark a formula, an implication, once I have applied the left implication rule to it. And then I apply the left implication rule only to unmarked formulas. And of course, I need to remove the marks as soon as I apply the right implication rule because then everything starts over again. I've dropped all sorts of stuff from the right-hand side, so it may make sense to apply the left-hand implication rule again. And then I impose a strategy, and the strategy tells me apply all rules before apply all rules exhaustively before I apply the right implication rule. So the right implication rule will only be applied if everything else fails. Because I have imposed this restriction on applying the left implication rule, and because all other rules, which are not currently seen on the board, because all other rules will always remove one connective, that means that this exhaustive application of all other rules will actually terminate. So either I remove a connective or I mark an implication to which I will then not be able to apply any other rule ever again. So this will clearly terminate. And only then do I apply my right implication. Okay. This strategy may actually seem slightly arbitrary, so even if you don't believe right now that I'm not losing power in the strategy, so this could be what happens, right? I mean, clearly I'm still conducting legal proofs, but I'm restricting the way I conduct them. So it might turn out that there are now valid sequences that I can no longer prove if somebody doesn't believe my arguments so far. So the completeness proof will actually show that anything that is not provable under this restrictive strategy will not be valid. So that shows that I haven't lost any proof power by imposing the strategy. Anything else I want to say about how I prove things? No, now I'll only make some observations. So first of all, I look at how the situation is going to look when I apply the right implication rule. Well, what does the sequence to which I apply this rule look like? Well, it consists of two things, either atoms and, as already observed for classical propositional logic, at this point the two sides are going to have disjoint sets of atoms, because otherwise I would be able to apply the axiom rule and my proof would actually succeed here, and I'm assuming that it fails. And it will consist of implications. Well, two kinds of them. I mean, one kind will appear on the right-hand side. That's fine. Most of them will be dropped, and one is the one to which I apply the rule. And of course, there will be implications on the left. So those are all going to be marked. That's why I'm putting the word marked in brackets. So marked, of course, applies only to implications on the left-hand side. Why is that? Well, because for all other connectives, I would have rules that very technically speaking, it could maybe happen that I have bottom on the right-hand side, right? Because there's no rule for that. I write that in brackets because it will just that will then just disappear in the next step, right? So possibly bottom could be in delta. Of course, there it does nothing because there's a disjunction on the right-hand side. There is no bottom on the left-hand side, because then I could apply the left bottom rule and just prove the sequence. Okay, so that's how my sequence looks like. So essentially it consists of atoms and implications. Implications can be on the left, in which case I just carry them across the rule, right? Because the context on the left-hand side is copied. And, well, they can be on the right. Well, in fact, there must be one on the right, because I'm saying I'm applying the right-hand implication rule. That one survives, sort of course, it's split up and distributed across the double arrow, and everything else is just dropped. Okay, so what else do I want to observe? So the set of these things that I find on the left-hand side, so implications, well, marked or not marked, actually. Let's just not care about this. Just confusing. So the set of atoms and implications that I find in gamma, will grow monotonically. None of these is ever taken away. Well, I just have to look at the rules, right? So the rules will Well, that's not quite true. So this is not literally true. So of course, if I move along this right branch here, then implications will actually disappear, but they'll be replaced by something that's even better than the implication. So they were replaced by the right-hand side of the implication, which is, of course, a still even stronger formula than the implication itself. So that's the only thing that can happen to an implication. It may be, so, and then, of course, I could then just equivalently imagine that it's being kept because if psi is here, then I might just as well have phi implies psi in here, because psi just holds without even assuming phi. Okay. So this monotonic growth in between two applications, on actually across applications of this here, means that is that even, maybe that's already sufficient. Do I even have to say any more? I wanted to say one more thing, but all right, so the left-hand side at some point is saturated, right? So the left-hand side grows and grows, possibly replacing implications by the right-hand sides. Of course, that doesn't say yet what happens to the right-hand side. So if I get arbitrary thrashing and arbitrarily growing right-hand sides, then of course that doesn't help me. It doesn't help me that the left-hand side is basically bounded. So I have to observe finally that the right-hand implication rule is only ever applied to subformulas of the target sequence, and then leads to a sequence that only depends on which subformula I've chosen. Of course, I may have several choices for delta here, but the sequence that I get then as the premise doesn't remember the delta, it only depends on the psi here. So there's only finitely many candidates. So that means that overall I get termination. So at some point, right, the delta grows and grows, sorry, the gamma grows and grows, morally, and in the delta, the only thing that can happen here is that I have to count how many times I apply this right-hand implication rule, and for that I just have to count how many candidate formulas do I have for the psi. Okay. So that is a very rough and hand-wavy argument about why this proof search is guaranteed to terminate. So the examples that you're asked to do in the lecture, of course, also terminate, so there's no evil, not in the lecture, in the exercise, so there's no evil counterexamples to this. You will find that they actually terminate. Of course, keeping in mind our strategy here, so of course one can get artificial non-termination by not adhering to this rule that the left-hand implication rule should only be applied once to every implication on the left, but as long as you stick to that, you will find that all these examples terminate for exactly these reasons. Okay. Okay, now comes the model construction. We have our finite failed proof search, and we extract a model by more or less, not exactly the same, but a very similar method as for S4. So, first, we have to say what the stakes are. So the states are going to be sequent to which no rule applies, according to our strategy, of course, other than the right implication. So we've done everything we can. We have marked all the implications on the left. We have taken apart all the other connectives. And then, we can possibly apply the right implication rule. Of course, it might be the case that we can't apply the right implication rule because there's no implication on the right, then we just stop. Okay, these are the states. Then we have to say what the valuation is for our propositional atoms. I have to say, what is pi of A for a propositional atom A? So this is going to be some set of states, and the states are sequence, so they have this form here, gamma double implies delta. And I take those of these states that have A as an explicit element on the left-hand side. So this, so far it's clear. I mean, the intention of such a state, gamma double implies delta, will be to validate all the formulas in gamma and to falsify all the formulas in delta. So in particular, this state is attempting to validate A, right? So we put it into the valuation. And as the transition relation, we just take descendancy in the proof graph. So every sequent that descends from another sequent or as far as it's a state will be a successor of that state. And in what follows, rather than introduce some mysterious symbol, I will call this below. So in that metaphor, the proof grows upwards, right? So I use the rules in the sense that I write them. I start writing my target sequent at the bottom of the blackboard and build the proof or the failed proof search upwards. And then I call this descendancy relation to have something short below. And then I need a notion of immediately below. And that means below with no interceding application of the right implication. So basically, two states are, one state is immediately below one another state if that other state is, in the model that I build, an immediate successor of that. So of course, the successors of the successor of the successors are still going to be successors because I'm building a transitive model, but the model that I build is finite, so it makes sense to talk about immediate successors, not like for the rationals. It doesn't make sense to talk about an immediate successor of a rational number, right? But it does make sense to talk about immediate successors here, and that's exactly captured by this immediately below relation. Okay, anything else say? No. So this is the full construction of the model. Now I have to just prove that the model does its job. So I've constructed the model obviously in the right way. So of course I have to, in principle, check that this is a legal intuitionistic model. Well, because the transition relation is something reflexive and transitive by definition, the descendancy relation, I get that I have an S4 frame, so that's no problem. So one would maybe have to think briefly about whether this is an intuitionistic valuation. So I have to check that when I go upwards in the proof tree, this valuation stays stable. So, but I mean, that's clear from looking at the rules, because nothing is ever lost from the left-hand side. Right, so if I have, for instance, A here, then I will still have it here. If I have A somewhere in here, then I will have it here, etc. So no atom is ever dropped by any of the rules. So. So here's the comment on that. This valuation is intuitionistic, which I can just see by looking at the rules. Okay, and now the key about all this is the correct wording of the truth lemma. So the truth lemma is basically, as usual, an inductive invariant, so to speak. And the key about inductive invariants is to word them the right way. And I hope the wording that I came up with this morning is the right one. So I'm rather confident, actually. So the truth lemma has two parts. Why two parts? Well, because I have these fundamentally different things that I'm trying to achieve. I'm trying to validate formulas that I find on the right, on the left-hand side, and I'm trying to violate formulas that I find on the right-hand side. And these are a fundamentally different character, because a formula, once it's valid, is going to stay valid as I go upwards in the frame, while a formula that is violated at some place might very well become valid someplace further up in the frame. So that's why these two planes look very different. Well, they don't actually look very different, but they are morally rather different. So let's say I have two things in the successor relation, which means that I have a sequent, which is a, well, this is just a, maybe color, no color as usual, so this is just meant to be any sequent, and this thing here I want to be a state. Okay, as I continue writing the statement, we will see that a Haskell type checker would correctly decode this typing, because I'm going to use the satisfaction operator on this thing, or the satisfaction relation on this thing, and of course satisfaction only makes sense for states in the model. But the left-hand thing is meant to be an arbitrary sequent. Okay, so let's see, so this is just meant to be somewhere below that state, and the truth lemma says that if I have some formula phi that is in gamma, then the state that I'm below will satisfy that formula. So this is already a generalized claim, right? Normally, all I need, actually, so all that interests me is that if this thing is a state and phi is literally in that state, then I want phi to be satisfied. But I need this more general phrasing, where I explicitly say, well, as I go upwards in the frame, first of all through the proof tree and then in the frame, this satisfaction of phi remains stable. And the second claim is about falsifying the formulas on the right-hand side. And this says something superficially very similar, but now only for the case that I have a sequent that's immediately below the state. So this is something that still happens morally in the same state of the model. So this sequent here is basically just an underdeveloped version of this state here. I haven't quite yet decided which disjuncts of a disjunction I want to satisfy, or which conjunct of a conjunction I want to violate, etc. So this here is basically a predecessor of this thing here, where some things are still undecided. Okay, and if then I have a formula on the right-hand side in the delta, then the state gamma prime double implies delta prime will falsify psi, so not satisfy psi. Okay. Right. Where can we go? Okay. So now, how do I prove this, right? Induction over phi, respectively, over psi. And I will do this simultaneously for 1 and 2. So these proofs of 1 and 2 will actually need the each other's inductive hypotheses. Okay, so I want to do item 1 first, so I go through all the cases for item 1. Okay, item 1 assumes that I have something on the left-hand side, so bottom does not occur. Bottom cannot be on the left-hand side because otherwise the sequence would be immediately provable. Then, conjunction, just for an example, I think I'll omit disjunction, so let's just do conjunction. So, how does this go? So what is happening is we have a conjunction on the left-hand side of this sequent here, and this sequent is below some state. Because this is a state, the conjunction must have disappeared on the way, because otherwise this wouldn't be a state. We could still apply the conjunction rule to it. So that means we have the following. We have some sequent on the way, so something of the form gamma double prime double implies delta double prime. I really hate using primes to get additional designators, but I mean the alternative would be putting numbers on these things, and that looks just as ugly, so just this once I'll do it. So this thing is between the two, so it's so gamma double implies delta is below gamma double prime double implies delta double prime, and this in turn is below gamma prime double implies delta prime. Okay. Hey, come on, I got through this, right? Okay, so we have this thing in between, which is meant to be the point where the conjunction gets lost, or at least some point after the disjunction gets lost. So immediately after the application of the left conjunction rule to that formula, basically. And then we'll have phi and psi both in gamma double prime, immediately after the application of the conjunction rule. They may disappear later because they may have additional connectives in there which are taken apart, but at some point in between they're going to be there. Well, now, of course, I can apply the inductive hypothesis, specifically the one for item 1. Which will tell me that my state here satisfies both these formulas, and therefore satisfies their conjunction. Fine. And the case for OR is, of course, similar. Now, the non-trivial case is the case where we have an implication. Okay. And I'll take this apart into, well, two cases, quote unquote, which are really a hidden induction which will crop up on the way. So be prepared for the fact that I'll suddenly start an induction over the path lengths that gets me from the sequent to the state here. So basically, I'll now be doing the essential part of the induction step. And that's So what do I have to show? Right. So I have to show that the prime thing here, the state, satisfies the implication. I'm not going to do induction over this distance here. I'm going to do induction from the over the distance from here onwards. I mean, that's what happens. We're looking at something that happens after this point here, something that lies in the future, so to speak, and have to show that this implication holds there. So first, I assume that this thing here has an immediate successor, right? So immediately below some state, which now is called gamma triple prime double implies delta triple prime. This gets up to quadruple, sorry. So it's immediately below that thing, which, as will become apparent in a moment, is meant to be a state. And this state, gamma triple prime double implies, gamma triple prime double implies delta triple prime. This is meant to satisfy the an antecedent of the implication, so phi. Okay, so we have to show that this state, the triple prime one, satisfies psi. Okay. And now comes the place where we apply the inductive hypothesis for the other claim. So the inductive hypothesis for 2 tells us, well, if our state gamma triple prime satisfies some formula, then as long as I stay immediately below it, that formula can never occur on the right-hand side. That's what the inductive hypothesis for this thing here tells me. So the inductive hypothesis tells me that the following situation is impossible. So now comes what? This is just the double prime one. So we never have a sequent gamma double prime double implies delta double prime between gamma the prime one and the triple prime one. Well, since this one here is assumed to be immediately below that one, all these belows are immediate belows. Such that the phi occurs on the right-hand side. That never happens. Because if it did, then all these belows are immediately below, and number 2 would then tell me that the last state here really doesn't, this last state here really doesn't satisfy phi. Okay, now if this doesn't happen, well, it would happen if along that path here that we see in the proof tree, I would ever run along this left branch here, because then I would get phi on the right-hand side. And because the rule must have been applied at some point, because these are states, instead the right-hand branch must have been followed. So that is the application of the left implication rule to phi implies psi. Along which path? Along the path from the primed state to the triple primed state. That application must have branched right, so it must have followed the right branch in that application. Oof. So now, and I just have to wipe my proof discipline here. I think we have now internalized this. Goes up further, right? No problem. Still have some room. Okay, so because we have branched right in that rule, we know what happens now. We have a double primed sequent above the primed one and below the triple primed one. That has followed the right branch here, that is, we have psi in gamma double prime. And now we apply the inductive hypothesis for claim one, which tells us our triple primed state, which is above the double primed one, satisfies psi. Oof. Okay. Observe that it's in this argument we haven't needed to assume that the implication appears here, right? So it was okay to drop it. Am I making sense here? Yes, including it here would make this a weaker premise, hence would make this a stronger rule, but we didn't need the premise to be that weak. It was perfectly okay. We only needed to know that psi wasn't there. There. Now come the cases for claim two, is that right? No, now comes case B. So this was just the case where we have an immediate successor. So I'll now do the second case, which for just to introduce a slogan in the middle of a complicated proof, this is the case of the distant descendants, right? So we've done the case of an immediate descendant, a son, and now we'll talk about the great-grandchildren. So distant means I have one immediately below step and then one below step of arbitrary length. The question in the induction is then always, where does the immediate step go? So it turns out it's best to put the immediate step directly after our original one. So what happens? We have our state here, of which we want to prove that it satisfies the implication. That's immediately below, say, a double prime state. And so let's write this here for clarity. This is meant to be a state. And now how many primes are this? 3. Below a triple prime state. Now this is the successor that we care about. So here we assume that it satisfies the antecedent of our implication. So why didn't I say this here? But yeah, I do. So, and such that the triple prime state that I reach by first and immediately below step and then some further steps satisfies phi. So again, this too is meant to be state. Okay. Now, various things might happen. Specifically, this implication on the left-hand side of the double arrow may have been processed on the way where? On the way up to here, either by following the left path or the right path. So that's basically what we do a case distinction over. So now I'm running out of letters for my cases. So capital A, case capital A. Case capital A is that my implication has been kept up to here. Then I call my newly spontaneously generated induction hypothesis. This part from here to here is shorter than the one from the prime state. Because here I've got a successor state, this was already a state, so now from the double prime to the triple prime state, that path is shorter than from the singly prime state to the triply prime. So by a spontaneously opened induction on path length, I know that the implication, basically the satisfaction clause for implication, works for states that are at most as far away as this one here. So I immediately get that this triple prime state does satisfy psi because it satisfies phi. Okay. And then there's the case B. So the case B is that the implication actually doesn't survive up to here. It has been dropped somewhere in between. Well, that it's been dropped, well, it can only be dropped if I follow the right path in the left implication loop. And that means, Okay, it doesn't necessarily mean that psi is going to be in gamma double prime. Might have been further processed already. But it means that we have what? So wait a moment, is it still there? I'm slightly confused if we still have it in gamma prime, or do we have it in... No, we only have it in gamma. So actually this is... Yeah, now I would have to have two cases before the ordering because, well, basically, the left implication rule has been applied to that implication somewhere along the way. That could have been either before or after we reach the primed sequent. So, so far, there's no guarantee that, in our assumption here, that the implication even survives up to here. So, I'll just say we have a quadruple prime sequent, because we've already used up all the primes up to triple prime. So this is on the path from our original sequent, gamma double implies delta, to the double prime. So somewhere on that path we have this triple prime thing before or after the primed one. Such that psi appears in gamma quadruple prime. And now comes our induction hypothesis. Now the outer induction, the one over psi, which now applies to the simpler formula here, regardless of path lengths. And we get that, wait a moment, which one? The triple prime one we want. So, a little bit. So the triple prime one, which is a state that comes after this thing in the path, satisfies psi. Oof. Okay. And then there is only one left, and I think we'll just barely manage. I'll erase the soundness proof, that should do it. Okay, so basically, it remains to do claim two. And, okay, I'm not even going to go through all the cases. We've seen that the cases for the boring rules are boring, right? So we only do the exciting one, or actually the exciting case, phi implies psi. So how does this work? Okay, we have phi implies psi in delta. And delta, gamma implies delta, is immediately below the primed version. Immediately below means we don't apply the right implication rule. That means we don't actually touch the implication, because it is on the right. So we get that the implication phi implies psi is still in delta prime. So our original thing here, so the primed version, to the primed version, we can now apply the right implication rule. So this is going to be below a double prime thing, to which this rule has been applied, so we see what happens in this case. We will have that phi is going to end up in gamma double prime because it goes to the left, and psi will end up in delta double prime. Well, actually, it will be all of delta double prime. So by the inductive hypothesis applied to these two formulas, well, this will be a this is a sequent, and then we get this below a triple prime version that's a state. Okay, and then this triple prime thing will, by the inductive hypothesis, satisfy phi, because phi is in a sequent on the left, on the left hand side of a sequent that is below this, and I want this immediately below. Of course, I can do that because I just go as far up as until I reach a state, and this thing by one we had this satisfaction of phi, and by 2 we have non-satisfaction of psi, and this implies that the primed state does not satisfy the implication because it has a successor, the triple prime thing, that satisfies phi but not psi. Okay. Yeah, and that is actually it. Thanks.